Feast of Dedication at Jerusalem. It was winter, and Jesus was in the temple area walking in Solomon's colonnade. The Jews gathered around him saying, "How long will you keep us in suspense? If you are the Christ, tell us plainly." Jesus answered, "I did tell you, but you do not believe. The miracles I do in my Father's name speak for me, but you do not believe because you are not my sheep. My sheep listen to my voice. I know them and they follow me. I give them eternal life and they shall never perish. No one can snatch them out of my hand. My Father who has given them to me is greater than all. No one can snatch them out of my Father's hand. I and the Father are one." The word of the Lord. I don't know about you, but I've been thinking about belonging a lot lately. During our three questions, the question came up of, you know, are you from New York or somewhere else? And was it Diane? Who did three questions? Dina. Yes, Dina. And you said you're solidly a New Yorker now, right? You've been here for a number of years. I've only been here for 3 years, and I know typically we always talk about, is it 7 years or 10 years or however many years before you are officially a New Yorker, right? Before you belong in New York. And so here in New York, maybe especially, we think a lot about this topic of belonging and whether someone really belongs here. I did, though, in just the last couple weeks, take one step that makes me feel belonging in a new way, in a different way. Two weeks ago, I joined the New York City Rugby Club. And I've started playing rugby. I'm starting at square one. I have no idea. I've never watched a game of rugby in my life. I'm learning the rules as I go, how to score, all of it. But it's been a lot of fun to start trying to belong in like a new circle of people. And I was talking to a friend yesterday about this, about belonging. And she brought up this analogy of sports, right? And how when you're all in a huddle together, you're belonging, right? And she brought up this like beautiful idea that in order for someone new to belong to that group, it just takes one person to move out of the way and let them in, right? And so I've been experiencing this for the last few weeks. As we have our huddles at the rugby club, you know, I just like come in the back and they open up and I'm circled up and it's a lot of fun. But we're thinking about belonging. The series that we're in right now for the life of the world is asking the question, what are the implications of the resurrection for our life today? And the passage that we're reading right now, I think, has some really significant things to say about the impact or the influence of the resurrection on how we belong to each other today. I'm going to get into this a little more later. I'm not here to offer, foreign policy or political strategy. But I think I would be remiss at this time, right, not to mention what's going on in our country as a response to what's going on in Gaza right now. I work with college students, and this question has been coming up a lot lately of belonging on campus, right? Just last Thursday, I was on campus at Columbia when 108 Columbia students were arrested on campus for protesting Gaza. And students all across the country are being arrested for trespassing, right? For this claim that they don't belong on the campus that they attend. And so students, people in New York, all of us, right? We're dealing with this question of belonging. Who belongs right now? Where do we belong? Who do we belong to? And this text that we read, John 10, verse 22 to 30, gets at this as well, and it almost, if you just read the text, it almost sounds like something, like Jesus is being kind of harsh. Because Jesus says, "You don't believe because you are not my sheep." Jesus is telling them, "You don't belong to me. And if you're just reading that without any context, that can be kind of intimidating, kind of scary, right? Like when I first started reading this passage, I was wondering like, okay, what does this mean? Does this mean that I need to do something to belong to Jesus? Does this mean that I need to, maybe that I have no control and that like, it's just God is arbitrarily choosing who belongs? What does this passage mean when Jesus says, you are not my sheep? And that's why you can't believe. I mean, how do we even start with belonging and say that belief and discipleship and following God all depends on this initial state of belonging? This text, though, in context, gives us something that I think can quell those fears and give us a lot of hope. See, they ask him, how long will you keep us in suspense? If you are the Christ, tell us plainly. This is John 10. And Jesus says, don't bother, right? He says, you're not my sheep. You won't believe. Doesn't matter what I say. Where does that come from? See, that actually comes, if you look in context, it comes from this pattern of treatment that these same people are giving to Jesus in even this same place. He's in the temple. It's on the festival of dedication, which is actually Hanukkah. So they're celebrating Hanukkah in the temple. If you go back a few chapters, if you go to chapter 7, John 7, you see that Jesus is already answering the question that they're asking here. In John 7, verse 16, in 15, they're like, okay, how did you get so much learning without having studied? And Jesus says, my teaching is not my own. It comes from him who sent me. If anyone chooses to do God's will, he will find out whether my teaching comes from God or whether I speak on my own. So way back here in chapter 7, he's saying, God sent me, right? He's answering the question before they're even asking it. If you go on to chapter 7, verse 28, you see that Jesus, still teaching in the temple courts, cried out, yes, you know me, and you know where I'm from. I am not here on my own, but he who sent me is true. And in response to this, in verse 32, they send guards to try to arrest him in this very same temple that we're reading about in chapter 10. And we see this repeated over and over again. They later, in chapter 8, they bring a woman to him in this very same temple in chapter 10 where Jesus is walking. They bring a woman to him accused of adultery. And it says that they do it as a trap in order to have a basis for accusing him. They had already made up their mind about who he was. They weren't doing this, they weren't asking these questions in order to genuinely understand who he was or get to the bottom of the truth. They were trying to trick him to have a reason to arrest him. Continuing in chapter 8, verse 13, they straight up say, here you are appearing as your own witness. Your testimony is not valid. So over and over again, Jesus is telling them, I'm not doing this on my own. God sent me. This is God's work. He says, if you knew me, you would know my Father also, in 8 verse 19. And over again, they are trying to send people to arrest him. They are telling people that he is insane. They're asking, is he going to kill himself? Is he suicidal? They're even saying in chapter 8, verse 48, aren't we right in saying that you are a Samaritan and demon-possessed? So they're saying he's out of his mind. They're saying he's demon-possessed. They're saying he's a Samaritan, right? Which for them, that would have been an insult. That was saying you're like this despised person that we don't even want to associate with. And over again, in the chapters leading up to chapter 10, Jesus is saying, I'm doing the work of God. It's not me, it's God doing this. Again, in chapter 9, he heals someone born blind, right? And then they ask, like, who sinned? Was it this man or his parents or what? Jesus says, this happens so that the work of God might be displayed in his life. As long as it's day, we must do the work of him who sent me. Again, he's saying, God sent me. And then in response, the Pharisees say, this man is not from God. He does not keep the Sabbath. Over and over again in the verses leading up to the passage we're reading, even three verses before, in chapter 10, verse 20, many of them said, he is demon-possessed and raving mad. Why listen to him? So that gives us a little more context for where we're at right now. This question, how long are you going to keep us in suspense? If you're the Christ, tell us plainly. Where is that coming from? They've been asking it over and over again. Jesus has been answering it over and over again. And there's really nothing else Jesus can do. And so Jesus says, you don't believe me because I don't belong to you. You don't belong to me. You're not my sheep. You've made it clear already that you've rejected me. You're not asking these questions because you want to know me. You're asking these questions because you want to trick me, because you want to prove that I'm not who I say I am. So this is really important to me. This gives me a lot of hope. Because when I ask those original questions about, like, okay, well, what does this mean? Why is God saying that some people aren't his sheep and other people are? What it tells me is that Jesus is extending the invitation to everybody to be his sheep, to belong with him. But he's also recognizing when people say they don't want to belong. They don't want to be part of him. And when that happens, there's nothing that Jesus can do. It's out of his hands. He's not going to force or manipulate. You do not believe because you are not my sheep. You don't belong with me, and I don't belong with you. There's a gospel truth that I want to bring out right now that I think gives us a guide to understand an alternative path that these people asking Jesus, interrogating Jesus, could have taken. And that also gives us some kind of framework to fit our own life into in this context. It's from another one of John's writings. It's from 1 John, the first epistle of John to the church. And it's chapter 4, verse 19 through 21. 1 John 4, 19 through 21. This gospel truth helps us understand what could have happened instead in John chapter 10. And it helps us understand perhaps what our life could look like instead as well. Okay. Sorry, I'm having trouble finding 1 John here. Here we go. 1 John 4, 19 through 21, it says, we love because he first loved us. If anyone says, I love God, yet hates his brother, he is a liar. For anyone who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. And he has given us this command, whoever loves God must also love his brother. Here's the gospel truth that I want to apply to this context today. It is the truth that it is easier to love a person than it is to love God. No matter how difficult it seems, the person next to you, the person that's hurt you, the person, the soldier fighting on the other side, the politician playing with people's lives, no matter who it is, a person in front of you is easier to love than God. He says, anyone who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. And so how does this truth apply to this story? How does it apply to this context? If the people interrogating Jesus in chapter 10, in chapter 7 through 10, over his whole life, if they had understood this one truth, they would not have rejected Jesus. He wouldn't have been able to say, "You are not my sheep." Even if they didn't quite understand who Jesus was, even if they didn't really know what it meant to be the Messiah, the Son of God, if they had understood that it is easier to love people than to love God, they would have been loving this person, Jesus, even though they didn't know who he was. And this is what matters for us today. We're asking questions about who belongs. We are seeing decisions made that affect people across the world from us, maybe, but still people. And we have an opportunity to apply this truth in our lives. We've, over the last couple weeks, right? I mean, last week on Tuesday was actually 200 days since October 7th. And I think the gospel has something to say to us at this time. A couple things. When we look at the numbers, right, we see that 1,139 people were killed and 240 were taken captive in Israel on October 7th. And I think what this gospel tells us is that that is a tragedy. And that the things that we did to them, we did to Christ. And then also, in the 200 days since, in addition to the hundreds of arrests of students that we've seen just in the last week or two, 34,183 people, at least, have been killed, including over 14,000 children in Gaza. And in addition to that, 77,000 and more have been wounded, and well over 1 million people have been displaced. And what the gospel is telling us is that is an incredible tragedy. And the things that we do to them, we are doing to Jesus. Because it is easier to love them than it is to love Jesus. And all of this, of course, is just in one corner of a world full of conflict, and just in the last 200 days, in the most recent example of decades and centuries and millennia of violence. And so I believe that the gospel is calling us to mourn for every life lost and to pray for the healing, the recovery of every person who has been harmed and affected by this violence. But then also necessarily, the other thing this gospel must be telling us to do is to find an end to the fighting. The killing has stopped in Israel, but it continues in Gaza. And whatever your political leanings or foreign policy philosophies, the Christian gospel does not support the killing of anybody. We are only loving God as much as we are loving the person on this planet that we love the least. When you kill someone, you crucify Jesus again. When you hate someone, the person you're hating is Jesus. And when you love someone, you're loving Jesus. So we read this story in John 10. And we see that Jesus didn't answer their question because he already knew where they were coming from. He knew they had already rejected him. And so his statement that you are not my sheep was not his rejection of them. It was his statement of a fact that they had already rejected him. They were not his sheep, and they would not understand what he said. And yet, even in the midst of this, he couldn't resist expressing his faithfulness and love toward them and toward anyone who would be willing to belong to Christ. In verse 28, he says, I give them his sheep. I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish. And no one can snatch them out of my hand. The amazing thing about the gospel, right? If we think of this principle that it only takes one person to let someone in to a circle of belonging. In a rugby huddle or whatever, I don't even know if it's called a huddle. It only takes one person, right, to open up and you can come in and join. In coming to earth, Jesus did that for us. God became human, dwelt among us, opening us up into the circle of divine, beautiful love. And the other amazing thing about this gospel truth, that it's easier to love people than it is to love God, is that by setting this beautiful example and making Jesus this person that is just worth so much love and adoration and affection, by doing this, not only is Jesus opening up the divine circle of God for us to participate in, but Jesus is opening up the circle of humanity. That in loving Jesus and in taking inspiration and motivation from Jesus to love others, we can actually begin to participate and belong on this entire planet of humans. Because when we love anyone, we're loving Jesus. And when we open up and we get involved in this circle of belonging, right, then that means there isn't a single person outside the reach of God's transforming love in our lives. The reading today ends chapter 10 of John, verse 30, saying, I and the Father are one. Over and over again, that's what Jesus is trying to communicate. I and the Father are one. You know me, you know the Father. And so as we go out into this week with whatever we're facing in our local community or in bigger things that we're trying to have an impact in, the one thing that I want to send you all with, and that I want to try to go with myself, is just this idea that God, Jesus, made a way for all of us to belong to God and to each other. And if we just begin practicing this, recognizing that the person we like the least, no matter what they've done, they're still within this circle of belonging, we can still love them, then we can be assured that we can be God's sheep. Because even this person that we might not know, we might not understand where they're coming from, we might naturally find it difficult to love. If we love them, who knows? We may just be loving Christ. Thank you.